This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now, you're multitasking. But what if you could also be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. So multitask right now. Get your quote now at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
With the first Jewel claim.
Oh, it's a photo of the Derby! Mystic Dan!
The race for the Triple Crown erupts into an epic party. The Preakness Stakes, May 18th on NBC and Peacock.
Dear listener, please close your eyes for this movie theater meditation brought to you by Fandango. Breathe in. Smell the fresh popcorn. Now exhale. Open your eyes and proceed to the best seats in the house you reserved on Fandango. Recline. Now, download the free Fandango app for movie times, tickets, and seats at your favorite theaters. Fandango. It's your ticket to the movies.
A.K. Scott will punt it for the Chargers. Kicks it very high. And the ball loose. Must loose at the 30. Falling on it at the 27. It looked like the Chargers got the muff. The snap. Ball put down. Kick is away. End over ran. It's good. It's good. The Chargers have won. And they have never led until now. And the pain so excruciating that Hopkins, after the game-winning kick, falls to the turf, holding onto his leg. But he's won it.
And that's all you needed to see from last night's game between the Denver Broncos
and
the Los Angeles Superchargers. Not so super primetime action. We've become used to that with the Broncos. We've now seen them in primetime 4 times in 6 weeks. And there are 3 more standalone games.
That's crazy.
The Broncos.
That's crazy.
Coming up over the balance of the season. It's PFT Live presented by Google Pixel. Learn more at Google Store. com. You'll learn more about last night's game and everything else happening in the NFL here on PFT Live on Peacock Series XM85. Hello to our good friends in the UK and Ireland. Tape delay on Sky Sports because Chris has a potty mouth, and podcast where the potty mouth is included at no extra charge. Hello, Chris. It was great seeing you this weekend, even though you continue to ignore my invitation to show up for Monday morning show.
I do. Do you? You know, I don't even like, I have not even seen a clip from Monday morning show. Are you sitting in my chair right here doing the show too? Are you sitting a little catty corner sideways how you like sit when we're both here? I haven't seen it. I didn't even catch a clip.
I sit where the microphone is.
Oh, man. So you were sitting in my seat, and you probably did.
I was right there.
You did probably spit into this microphone, and yeah, okay, all right. It wasn't too messy this morning when I got in here. It was pretty good. So I didn't
spit into the microphone, but I did fart into the chair.
Oh, great. Oh, thank you. That's great. Very nice of you.
Hey, by the way.
Right.
By the way.
What?
Why is there the copy of my book that I personally signed and sent to you laying on the floor in that studio? Why is that?
Well, it wasn't laying on the floor. Now,
yes, it was.
No way. That's not
it
the one.
It was yesterday.
That's not the one that you sent to me personally. That's wrong.
Oh.
No.
Okay.
That's one that Matt Casey had brought in here, producer Matt Casey, who had brought in here as props, you know, when you were, you know, just every day, you know, you just didn't care where you were pubbing your book. So I had it here just in case, just to hold it up and like have fun in there. Got it? Got it?
All right. That's fine. So it's the copy I personally signed and sent to him. There's the photographic evidence.
Oh, wow.
Thank you, Courtney.
Yeah.
Laying on the floor. Wait, let's see.
See, Matt. Look, Matt.
Oh, it is Matt.
Yes.
It is Matt's.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. You, what, you mumbling,
well,
stuttering prick, you? Yeah, you're funny.
We blurred that out. Okay, that's good. That's good. And that's,
I'm a real friend. Don't worry, I wouldn't do that.
Somebody apparently heard me complaining about it yesterday, even though I didn't mention it on the show. I was going to wait until next Monday, but then I thought, you know what? If that's Chris's copy, I may as well get to the bottom of it today.
Never.
And this is one of those days where if we can talk about anything other than the game, it's a good day.
Oh, no,
but,
we got to do it.
But here's something that occurred to me this morning. Because as you're sitting there absorbing it, you think certain things like, yeah, when is this going to be over with? But when it's over, there are plenty of storylines, and we've got all of them covered at PFT, but we're going to talk about all of them today. We take for granted certain things in football. We take for granted a long snapper who won't sail the ball over the punter's head, and you never see that anymore. And you rarely see a bad snap, a truly bad snap, on a field goal try.
Yeah,
rarely.
It's rare.
If the regular guy's injured,
right?
You rarely see a bad spot where guys fumbling and mumbling and the ball around.
Yeah, we had the Bengals game this year, right, against the Steelers. Hurt their snapper. That's the only game the whole year we've had any issues there.
But we've had two primetime games in week six decided by the inability of the punt returner to catch the ball. Now, last night, it's a little bit harder when someone is being blocked into you while you're trying to catch the ball. But still, that should be as automatic. That function, it's so important to secure possession of the ball. That should be as automatic as the long snap, should it not? Or is it just that difficult with the ball up there and guys running at you?
Yeah.
And if that's the case, let the damn thing hit the ground.
Yeah, well,
if you have any doubt whatsoever with the game on the line, when especially, and you know, we talk about analytics. Well, it would seem to me that there are certain occasions where the analytics would suggest stay the hell away from it. Because in a game where it's punt, 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 punt in overtime, you don't want to give the other team that advantage. And I wish I had tweeted this before it happened, because I did have the thought, I really did, as they're punting back and forth in overtime, you know what? Somebody's just going to muff one of these, and that's going to be the game. They're just going to keep punting until somebody muffs and somebody's going to get a short field goal, and that's going to be it, because the offenses went into a shell in overtime.
Yeah, well, it was a shell for majority of the football game. I mean, even when
why isn't there more emphasis put on, and maybe it's just a rare skill.
I think it is a little bit of a rare skill.
Balls coming down, guys all around you,
right,
and to not mess it up in that moment.
It is a rare skill. That's where I would like, just, you know, when I would say, hey, it's not the same as snapping or field goal snapping or punting, you know, or anything like that. This is a little more pressure packed, in my opinion. You know, again, it's practiced, you know, to exhausting matter, you know, exhausting. You did take a ton of reps. I can't speak today, whatever I'm trying to spit out there. But they, I mean, it's every day before practice. It's after practice. It's, you know, get out there way before the game. Get out there again in full pads way before everybody's out there for the game to catch it again. It's just, Mike, imagine it. You know, again, it's usually a crazy dude or a really sick athlete that is doing that job, to where, wait, he can look up, look down, look up, look down. He wants to return it, and that's crazy in itself. He wants to go, wait, I don't really want a fair catch this. I want to catch it. How much room do I got? How much room do I got? I can catch it. I can run. Okay? And then you play into the fact of, hey, yeah, you're moving, you're running, the ball spinning a weird way off of different punters, you know, feet and how they punt the ball. And then you add in lights and sun and some elements there. It's one of the tougher ones for sure.
But they simulate everything else in practice.
Yeah.
I don't know what it would take. Like, having rabid dogs running at the guy in practice,
well, yeah,
having rattlesnakes on the ground. I mean, what you would think they would come up with a way to approximate the psychological
pressure and all that
that arises in that moment,
right,
so you never see that. And I don't know. I assume there's guys out there that are so sure-handed we just don't notice it. That's the thing. You don't notice it until it happens, until it bounces off the face of Velus Jones, the Bears punt returner, who may not be the Bears punt returner after what we saw on Thursday night. But two boring primetime games decided by a muffed punt and the field position that goes along with it. Now, there was a throw from Justin Herbert to Mike Williams that got the ball into closer range for Dustin Hopkins, because that adds to the drama when the kicker is injured and his leg was
a hamstring issue
all night.
Right,
yeah,
right.
The hamstring that happened when he made his first field goal of the night, and he kept kicking through it and collapsing to the ground after his kicks. He was reliable, but a 39-yard field goal, which is the exact distance of the one that Gary Anderson once missed in the 1998 NFC Championship game, that would have put the Vikings up by 10, but I digress. But 39, anytime there's a 39-yard field goal, folks, I think of that 24 years later. But that's an automatic field goal in today's NFL, but it's not automatic when the kicker's got a bad leg. So there was some drama there, and I'm thinking he's going to miss this damn thing, and this game is going to be tied.
Yeah,
we're
right.
Sat here
it had
for
that
70
feel.
Minutes of football,
right.
And we're going to have a tie.
Yeah, it had that feel. It seemed like a game that nobody really wanted to win. You know, there was no offensive imagination at all. You know, again, I know the Chargers are 4-2, but I don't sit here and go, oh, wow, man, are they fun to watch, and ooh, wow. I mean, I've gone downhill ever since they've lost their game to the Chiefs. I mean, that was the high point of the year for me for the Chargers, getting into it. When they lost to the Chiefs, I went, oh, they look good tonight. They look like they legit have a Super Bowl caliber type of football team. I think they've looked worse every week since. I mean, really. It just it's again.
What
the
do you think it is?
Well,
what is it? What
well,
are you seeing?
One, the defense is not special, right? We know that last night. I mean, that offense is nothing to write home about. They're not going to be compared to the greatest show on turf anytime soon. That's for sure. I mean, we'll unpack them in a minute, but they're embarrassing almost on that side of the ball, the Broncos. And then the Chargers defensively, yeah, okay, solid night. But again, I'm not going to put it in high regard against that group. You know, they're not a great run-stopping team, which is another thing where it was weird with the Broncos last night. They didn't run the football. But then the passing offense, I mean, to me, Mike, they're doing a disservice. They're dropping the ball here with how they play football with Justin Herbert. You know, he's the machine, right? And we talk about it all the time. When he's in the pocket, and it's just like he was last night. But can we throw a freaking ball past 5 yards? I mean, really? We're going to have one of the greatest arms in the history of the sport. One of the greatest arms in the league right now, not named Mahomes or Allen. Justin Herbert's in that conversation. You would agree. He might be there with them when the pocket's clean and all that. And all they do is throw 7 and 8 yard passes. They do nothing ever in any game, really, to push the ball down the field other than he might throw a back shoulder to Mike Williams 20 yards down the field while he's covered. And holy cow, is it frustrating to watch. And it's got an offense that's got all the answers, but no pressure or pizzazz or anything that makes you think there's something elite about it that's going to get them over the hump to get them where they want to go. What's your thought,
there,
Mike?
There wasn't it.
Yeah.
Well, they made the point anytime they did throw to Mike Williams, which was rare, like why aren't they throwing to Mike Williams more often? Keenan Allen's been injured. I can't imagine they miss him that much that it dramatically transforms the offense into what we've seen. But you're right, Justin Herbert last night, 57 passes, the most passes ever thrown in a game without a touchdown pass being thrown. And
for 238 yards. For 238 yards is it's almost hard to do. Right? I can't even believe it. This day and age in the NFL, 57 times for 238
4.17 yards per attempt. That is pathetic.
Pathetic.
4.17, 1.21 gigawatts. And, I mean, you have to give the defense credit.
Yeah.
Because at some point, I mean, we see bad offense and we just think the offense sucks. At some point, the defense is good. And that's the problem. The Broncos' defense doesn't deserve what it's getting offensively.
Right.
This team
could
be undefeated if it was getting, you know, all those Broncos fans were all razzed up going into the season, justifiably so. New quarterback, new coach, new owner, new everything. They've suffered through crap since they won Super Bowl 50, haven't been to the playoffs, multiple losing seasons, no good quarterbacks, and everybody's excited. Well, the defense is great, and E.J. Everett probably won't be there next year. That's how great the defense is, because he'll be a head coach somewhere else. That's how great the defense is. And you saw before overtime, Justin Simmons, who was activated from injured reserve or PUP and back on the team, and getting the guys fired up. I mean, the defense held its end of the bargain. Can you imagine how the defensive players felt last night in the locker room when they did everything they could to win that game? And, you know, the guy muffs the damn punt at a time when we're winning the field position battle and we have the Chargers on the ropes and maybe we can get Brandon McManus out there for a 60-yard field goal
to win it. Right.
And we can't get the game done when we've done everything in our power to win it. That has to be so frustrating, and at some point it's going to create a fracture in the locker room.
Well, yeah, it's you know, not there yet, but you're right. I'm sure they are frustrated. They're one of the best defenses in football. I mean, you know, plain and simple. You can see they can rush the passer. Patrick Surtain is in the conversation for the best corner in the game. Justin Simmons is special. We got guys across the board that are special in their secondary. I mean, it's a top-tier defense. We've seen them make life hard on everybody. And, you know, I'm sure they're not at that point yet, but that's what was frustrating for all of us last night. There was two great quarterbacks on the football field, and, you know, one didn't play bad, but it was just them. Oh, okay, 5 yards. Oh, 4 yards. Whoa, he jammed it in there for 3 yards, which I don't know if they could have done a whole lot more than that. So that's where I don't want to be like, it's boring, but I'm not going to be too critical. But it's hard not to be critical of the Broncos and Russell Wilson. It is. It's across the board. I mean, it's across the board. And, you know, hey, 10 for 10 start. Hey, great. Okay, yes, it was a 10 for 10 start. But even that, Mike, I mean, that didn't make me feel good, the 10 for 10 start. The 10 for 10 start was three plays where he broke the pocket. Again, it had nothing to do with the offense. It was just, wait, nobody's there. I'm not going to read. I'm not going to throw to the open guy. Let me escape. And, okay, I do have a talented arm, and I made a throw. And, oh, they busted a coverage here. But you can really boil it down to this. I mean, this was the second of big throws in the first half for the Broncos. They had one on the first drive that set them up for the field goal. Then they have this and the play after right here. And good night, everybody. Just believe us, they didn't do anything else after this for the rest of the freaking night.
It is amazing that the offense just went away.
Oh, my gosh.
10 for 10 start. 5 for 18 the rest of the game. Horrific on third down. Mr. Limited, well done on that. Oh, sorry, Russ. But hey, look, he's getting well paid to take the abuse.
Yeah, he's got
Melvin Gordon got benched. He had 3 carries for 8 yards in the first quarter. He was done after that. And Peter King has been openly advocating. Well, Peter King, one of the nicest, most level-headed, even-keeled guys in all of media, has been openly saying, put Melvin Gordon's ass on the bench, and they finally did, without him fumbling. And, you know, that would have been a night for him to really come out and
play
hard.
That's where I was shocked.
Former team. Right. What are you doing? Give the guy a chance. Latavius Murray stepped up. He's fairly new to the team. Mike Boone, another guy with Vikings connections, and George Payton back to Minnesota along with Murray. But Gordon, you know, Cam Akers is available on trade. Melvin Gordon may be available on trade. Maybe the LA or the Broncos and the LA Rams can just do a swap of Cam Akers and Melvin Gordon.
Well, what happened? Like that's where we never really got to the bottom of it. You saw him in there, and it's like, there was some sort of disagreement or argument on the sideline that we weren't aware of because it was.
He said no one told him. No one told him why he was benched.
It was very
clear. I felt
like
it could have made a difference.
I do.
No one told me why.
That was weird about it. And again, we're talking about a team that is, I mean, bad run defense. It's one of the poor run defenses in football for the second year in a row. I was there early on going, wait, are we serious here, Denver? Are we going to throw 1 yard passes to the sidelines and not run the ball against the Chargers and test that out? And, you know, and then he hits the two or three plays and you go, oh, okay, well, maybe they got something tonight. I don't know. But then they never really got into it that way. But yeah, you would think tonight, that last night would have been a night where they could have cashed in on that. Certainly cashed in on it as the game went along better than what they did and what they were trying to do. I mean, it's where, Mike, it's hard to watch. You know, replays I see, it does look like people are open at times. Mike, people getting just absolutely scotch-free, whatever the hell they say out in the streets, all right, with blitzes. We're talking about a quarterback that we're going, wait, you played all this football, and they brought a weak side linebacker and a free safety blitz, and we don't block anybody. There's no adjustment to the protection or anything. Like, things that, to me, as a quarterback that played 8 years and a guy that expects a lot out of someone like Russell Wilson, I just went, some of the stuff, I'm just going, damn, I mean, he's got to go back to the drawing board. We're missing some basics here as far as what they're doing on the offensive side of the ball, Mike.
There's clearly a disconnect between the Nathaniel Hackett system that he supposedly constructed specifically for Wilson, along with his system. He mentioned that after the Thursday night loss to the Colts from 12 days ago that went to overtime, and the Colts eventually won, and we talked about that.
Yeah.
But what, you know, this is what Sean Payton said a couple weeks ago. Remember we talked about this? I would look at everything that Russell Wilson did when he was with Seattle that worked, and I would make sure that that's incorporated into the offense, and I would use it. It's that simple. So I don't know if there's a philosophical thing here. You know, Nathaniel Hackett's been waiting all these years to be a head coach. Now he's a head coach. It's his team, and he's going to make the square peg fit in the round hole, and he's not going to do what works for Russell Wilson. At some point, they've got to just take a step back and do what they know Russell has done in the past that has worked. And we see it in flashes. And I know you can't make that your base offense.
Yeah.
Hey, Russell, just run around until somebody's open. But maybe that's what they did in Seattle. Maybe we need to go back and look. And when we see what worked for Russell Wilson, it was run around and somebody pops open. You know, every once in a while, you know, you would drop back and you throw that 70-yard beautiful arc. But it's just not there unless he does get out of the pocket.
No, well, yes. But the problem is he's not going to be able to run and move like he used to. And he doesn't already. He has lost a step, so he's not as dangerous as that as far as that's concerned. And we saw, you know, some progress in the last 2 years up in Seattle with him throwing in the pocket and dicing people up to. You'd think, well, okay, I know there's some new moving parts here and we're learning a new offense, but it should be, you know, better than what it is. And I've watched just about every snap of them on the offensive side of the ball this year where – I think they are doing things that he's supposed to be comfortable with. I'd love us to play that package of plays we just played in the last little two series, guys, there, Courtney, if we can. Just because, you know, even there, Mike, there's fundamental flaws. Like, first off, where are we running there? The pocket was perfect. Why did we run? Okay, I know we got 9 yards.
Because he can't see.
I know. I mean, hear you, Mike.
At what point is that the issue? He can't see when he's in the pocket.
I understand that. But at times, he's also like, it's just even the package before that, guys, the one we played before that, that was like three or four passes. Yeah, I understand. But at some point, too, he's got to like, nobody can see perfectly in the NFL. You got to just be able to go, wait, through my studies, through where guys are lined up, you know, this 20-yard out. Yeah, I don't see perfectly, but he's there. I got to throw it. And he's reluctant to do that. You know, like this play here is even scary. He didn't even see the safety across it. Good thing he threw a crap ball because Troy Aikman said it. That was going to be a pick. Here, it's step up in the pocket. Okay, I'm not like necessarily disappointed with that one. That wasn't that bad. I get it, and that was a tough play. But we got another play coming up here where, again, there's another one where I go, that was fine. Stay there. You caused the chaos and the creation by moving. And there was a bunch of other plays throughout the night where I wish I could have clipped off for the show and said, like, hey, look at this. Why the hell is he moving? It's perfect. It's just it's really head-scratching right now. His performance, what he's seeing, the panic in the pocket, first guy not open, let me look at the rush and just run around like a chicken with my head cut off. I didn't think we were going to see this with Russell Wilson in Denver.
Your criticism of Deshaun Watson back when he was actually playing football a couple of years ago was that he treated every play like it was the last play of the Super Bowl and he was trying to extend it and do too much every snap.
Sure.
I feel like Russell Wilson – despite the calm demeanor and the smile and all is well when he's talking to the media, I think inside there's a storm raging, and maybe he thinks any given snap he can turn it around, and he's feeling that pressure every time he has the ball to reverse now 6 weeks of frustration, and next game it'll be 7 weeks of frustration, and he feels like there's so much on him in that moment, like the pressure on the guy to catch the punt. Like, he feels that tremendous pressure constantly because he knows what people are saying. He knows how people are reacting to him. There has to be some sort of turmoil in the locker room. There has to be between the offense and the defense. You know, I don't know if you noticed this, but at the end of the first half, he made sure he stood out there in the hallway and welcomed every member of the team into the locker room. Now, did he do that because he knew there was a camera there? Quite possibly. But I think they're doing everything they can to hold this thing together because he's the one that is going to be regarded, as this continues, as the main reason why it's not working. And I said before the show, I saw Drew Locke's name trending on Twitter, and I couldn't help but wonder whether the Broncos fans are saying, can we just have Drew Locke back at the trade deadline?
That'd be hilarious, right? Give us him back. Give him back to us, and we'll keep him here. And we'll keep Geno, too. We actually don't even want Russell back. We'll keep Geno. We'll give you Drew Locke, and we'll go from there. That's from the Seattle perspective. But, yeah, it is amazing. It is amazing right now what we're watching.
I wonder if Pete Carroll, that picture he tweeted after beating Cliff Kingsbury,
which was
Cardinals,
awesome, right?
I wonder if that's his setup when the Broncos are on in primetime too. I have a feeling that Pete's sitting there all chill and happy.
Right?
He's got to be. He's got to be.
I'll never admit it. This is amazing.
He's got to be loving every minute of this because he's been vindicated. Even though the Seahawks are 3-3, although in the NFC 3-3, hell, in the AFC 3-3, you're right in the thick of things.
All right.
But Geno Smith is playing great.
Yep.
And Russell is playing as poorly as he could have possibly played. Pete Carroll is vindicated by the first 6 weeks of the season.
Yeah, I think without a doubt. Or anybody that was been up in Seattle that, you know, had beef with Russell Wilson or didn't like, you know, the way he treated guys or the fact that he got too much attention. I think they're all smirking. You know, as we saw last week or 2 weeks ago with Richard Sherman and company, I think there's a lot of people there that, you know, rightly so. I think some took some cheap shots, certainly, around there that haven't loved the way he's treated them or whatever else. And now they're basking in the glory of his, you know, horrible football play. But I don't know.
You know what,
though?
Let me say one thing. Yeah. Because Richard Sherman's got this podcast now, and he put out a teaser last week that Marshawn Lynch was going to be on. And they created the impression in the teaser that Sherman and Lynch crap all over Wilson. And Lynch was actually very empathetic and very charitable toward what Russell's going through now. And I love Marshawn Lynch, and he gets it. And he's concerned about the mental health of guys who currently play and guys who did play. And he understands there's still a human being inside there. Despite everything that Russell tries to sell, there's still a guy in there who's trying to figure his life out. And he's trying to justify this huge contract. And he's trying to be the guy that the Broncos fans want him to be. And it's got to be difficult. And I thought what Marshawn Lynch actually said was so much better. It's so easy to crap on the guy now. And I think what Lynch said, instead of this negativity that was teased by whoever produces and distributes the podcast, I think it was very well said by Marshawn Lynch. And,
yeah,
you know, at some point we do have to understand, even though by all appearances, Russell Wilson hasn't made, and of course he wants us all to think he's got it made and to envy his life and it's so great. Right now, he's going through some stuff. He is, just like Tom Brady, and these guys are human beings, and we need to – it's easy to pile on, but we need to remember that. At the core, there's some stuff that they're both dealing with right now. And it doesn't make life easy for either of them.
No. Well, and people, the thing I think that's bad is people get personal, and that's where it goes. It crosses the line. And, you know, again, not that you have to love Russell Wilson, but, you know, I people talk.
Like we said last week, nobody said anything while he's playing well.
That's right.
They all harbor this resentment, and they think now that he's playing poorly, we can crap all over him because he doesn't matter to us anymore. We don't need to get him on our show anymore. We don't want him on our show anymore, so we can say what we really think.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, if you had an issue with the guy, say it when he's great,
right?
Like I do about Aaron Rodgers, although I guess he's not that great.
Well, not right now.
We are seeing this golden age of quarterbacks where we had intersection of great young quarterbacks and these older quarterbacks. The older guys are starting to fall apart before our eyes.
You're seeing it, and no doubt about it. That's 100%. They're not in the other. They're right now. They're not in the class of the young guys. They are not. And again, we can get into Sunday and those two freaks of nature in Kansas City and Buffalo. Though they stand alone as the two best quarterbacks in football. There is a gap between them and the rest of everybody else. And then you can start talking about the Burrows and the Herberts and Lamar Jackson, in my opinion. And then maybe you start to get to the old guys. Jalen Hurts, maybe you throw him into the conversation this year. I mean, but yeah, it's certainly not. Let me talk about Brady, Russell Wilson, Matt Ryan, or Aaron Rodgers right now. Absolutely not. They're not in the same stratosphere as some of these young guns. And you're right, it is kind of like alarming to see, and especially with Russell Wilson, because it's so all over the place, and it's so inconsistent, and it's bad reads, and it's, Mike, I mean, maybe you're right. Maybe it's the pressure to want to make something happen, but there's a side of me, too, that goes, or is it the pressure of not wanting to make a mistake, too? That's the other thing that, you know, I come
all
away
of it,
with,
it's
right?
All of it.
I know.
The
maybe,
blender
right.
gets turned on
yeah.
high every
yeah.
time the ball ends up in his hands.
Yeah.
I think it's everything.
Right.
He doesn't want to make a mistake, and he wants to reverse all the mistakes he's made, and it gets compounded, and it's more pressure on him each and every time in each and every game, and we're going to see it again, and we're going to see it against the Broncos coming, or the Jaguars, coming up on a Sunday morning from London in a couple of weeks, in the fifth of their seven standalone games this year.
Yeah, it is. We're going to see. I mean, The thing that's alarming is we saw them come out of the gates and look good. And then, or have moments of looking good to go, oh, this thing in Denver here has got a chance. And we haven't seen really anything that is even resembles the second half of the Seattle game since that. And in a lot of ways, I could sit there and go, I think it's gone the actual opposite direction, you know, other than just a few random big plays. Like,
well, the drive against the 49ers.
Exactly.
Right? They'd be 1-5 right now, but for that drive.
Exactly. The drive against the 49ers. There's two or three throws against the Raiders, you know, even though they lost the game. And then last night, there's the three throws. Other than that, it is below average football. And, I don't know where they go from here. This is a tough one. And, again, I think they're doing their best to try to organize the offense, Mike, to make it feel comfortable for him. Even last night, again, a lot of concepts where everything is outside makes him feel comfortable. He does not want to throw in the middle because of what you said earlier. I guess he can't see it clearly enough. It's always been an issue, but right now it seems like it's more of an issue than ever before. And because they can't get other things going, it's even more glaring that they don't attack that part of the football field. You know, we could think about it last night again, too, where think off the top of your head, Mike, really, do you remember him throwing a ball in a tight window down the middle of the field the whole night? I didn't plan on even going here, but as I think about it, I go, I can't really remember a throw off the top of my head.
Those guys are all wide open.
Right.
I mean, the ones that were completed were wide open.
Right, right. But I don't remember one where, hey, drop back for five, hitch, and, oh, he hit the tight end in between the, you know, the weak linebacker and the middle linebacker. Nothing like that. It doesn't exist in their offense, and it's just hard to exist and be creative or be good on that side of the ball without some of these elements they're missing right now.
I've got an idea that's percolating in my brain. I want to let it continue to churn while we listen to Russell Wilson talk about last night's loss and also the shoulder injury that he had entering the game that happened against the Raiders a couple of weeks ago.
Shoulder did good, you know. But listen, I think the only thing that matters is us winning. You know, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. The only thing that matters is us winning and finding a way. Been through tough times before. I know that we can come on the other side. We got too many good football players and guys who work their butts off every day, and so we got to make that happen. And you know, there's no excuse for it. We got to find a way. Like once again, I thought we did some really good things. We did some things that we should have tightened up and done better. And so, what I'm focused on is, you know, finding a way to keep doing the good things that we were doing. You know, how do we keep doing those things? You know, tonight was unfortunate. We should have won that game. We felt like. And we got to keep going.
You know what? He's getting closer to having a human moment. He's starting to not believe his own BS. Like, after the loss to the Colts, he was able to deliver all that smiling. And I think he realized you can't smile your way through it. You can't smile your way through a crap performance. At some point, you have to reflect in the way you deliver your comments what everyone else is feeling. They don't want to see you smiling and happy after you've lost a game that you should have won. They said they should have won last night. They should have won the game against the Colts. They should have won both games. And I just feel like he's starting to realize, I still am going to deliver the words, but I'm not even going to try to sell that I believe them anymore. And I think maybe after another loss or two, we're going to get closer and closer to, and I don't want to psychoanalyze the guy, but we're peeling the layers down toward the real Russell Wilson one loss at a time.
Well, I mean, I hear you. He's got to be, I give him a lot of credit, and this is why I think some people don't like him sometimes. He's cheesy, corny, whatever. He is what he is. I don't think it's fake.
He wasn't cheesy or corny last night, though.
No.
That's what I'm saying. The facade is starting to melt away from Russell Wilson.
Yeah, I hear you. I do. Well, because it's just, he's a beaten puppy right now, and what else can he say? So he's got to start, you know, kind of being real with the situation here a little bit and can't just always spin it as, wait, I'm oblivious to the world. The glass is half full. Because that will, like, that'll also be like the guys in the locker room be like, is this dude delusional? Like, it's not sunny and the glass is not half full. You know, shit out here is dark and there's a drop of water left on the glass right now. We are crappy, right? So that's where, you know, it is good to see that. But, yeah. The offense, I just don't see signs of it turning around. And, You know, if they can squeak out wins while they look ugly, okay, that softens the blow as they try to figure that out on that side of the ball. But, you know, it's, wins are going to be tough. And if they lose on top of looking ugly, man, it's just going to be a lot more pressure and people talking about this as the weeks go on.
Also did not end his press conference with Broncos Country, Let's Ride. Did not.
Wow, and that's news.
That
right
may be
there.
The first time that's he news. Did not sign off with, it used to be Go Hawks, then it became Let's Ride. And
yeah, well, he's off the horse right
there,
now.
There are occasions where it just doesn't work. And you know what? It's a testament to how great he was in Seattle, that they were never this bad. There was never a time when we were like, what the hell is wrong with the Seahawks? What the hell is wrong with Russell Wilson? That's what makes this so stunning. 10 years of good to great to excellent for the entire team and for Russell Wilson. And we never, ever had been in this situation where like, this guy just didn't very good. And that's the thing with franchise quarterbacks. Once we know they're great, they stay great. Having a guy fall off like this doesn't happen. It's why there's limited risk in signing a guy to a massive contract. Well, the Broncos, they're stuck with Russell Wilson at least through 2025 unless they want to take a massive and crippling cap hit. And at some point, if this continues, you just have to rip off the Band-Aid and deal with it. But this is stunning. It's unprecedented in the salary cap age. I can't think of another time where a guy who was – he's only 34 – I don't know, he turns 34 next month. He's right in that gulf in the early to mid-30s. He should not be falling off like this. Not when Tom Brady is still going fairly strong at age 45.
Yeah.
And Aaron Rodgers in his late 30s, Matt Ryan in his late 30s. This shouldn't be an age thing for Russell Wilson. I don't know what it is. And you know what else is going to happen? After every loss, we're going to hear of another injury. Now there's a hamstring that supposedly happened fourth quarter of last night's game. So you got the shoulder, you got the hamstring. And if he's ever benched, I don't know, not that they got anybody to bench him for.
No, they don't.
But he's never going to be benched. He's going to be too injured to play before he's ever benched.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. It is. And yeah, he's taking some hits, you know, and a lot of that, you know, I will say a lot of it, again, their offensive line's solid. It's not great. I know we had moments of seeing Khalil Mack and company collapse the pocket. But, man, as we talked about earlier, some of the hits and the running is also just, it's him. It's unnecessary. It's him not working the offense, working the pocket. And, yeah, Mike, I mean, it is shocking to see. I can't remember a move by a big-time quarterback like this that's this bumpy where, you know, we're just so accustomed to seeing him be a clutch and the way he, you know, the way he plays and operates. It's just it's all in shambles right now. The one thing you know is he's going to continue to work. I'm not going to, like, throw in the white towel on Russell Wilson yet. That's for sure. I'm not. He's been in these, you know, problems and battled back before, but this is as bad as we've seen it. And, you know, it's like he's getting used to a new culture, a new offense. He's feeling all the pressure like you're talking about. And, you know, to your point, too, with what you're saying with Pete Carroll, I think there's a little merit to they figured out maybe how Russell played and operated and played a style of football, you know, that was best for him while also probably – you know, making him like this a little bit in the way he plays quarterback too, that's adding to, you know, some of these problems that we're all talking about right now.
They hit his flaws so well that other people didn't realize the flaws were even there. That's basically what it came down to. They
looks
managed
like that right
him.
Now.
They managed him in a way that, because remember I used to say about the Seahawks, because we believed it. Hey, Seahawks, if you don't regard this guy as a franchise quarterback, trade him to a team that does. And they did, and he's not. That's what's amazing about all of this. Now, let me throw this one out there.
Yeah.
Because they have the 4-2 Jets
right.
coming to town this week. Rematch of the 1998 AFC Championship game. We have managed to mention both championship games from the 1998 season. Saw the Broncos win their second straight Super Bowl. But they lose that one. Let's say if. We don't know. And we're not allowed to say maybe they will because Aaron Rodgers doesn't want that negative energy manifested, and he was right. Then they go to London to play the Jaguars, and who the hell knows with the Jaguars. But, you know, Chris, the bye week's after the London game. And there's so much focus now on Russ that we've kind of forgotten that Nathaniel Hackett isn't getting it done. Can you rule out the Walmart crowd just saying, let's have E.J. Evero ride this thing through to the end of the season. I mean, if we're going to lose him anyway after the year as a head coaching candidate elsewhere, let's give him the rest of the season to see if he can simplify this, turn it around, let the team run through the defense, and let's come up with a way to get Russell Wilson to play like he did when he was winning a Super Bowl with a team that, wait for it, ran through the defense.
Yeah, I mean, I hope not. I and for my money, we haven't gotten there. I wouldn't. Again, it's not easy what we're talking about here. It is a first-time head coach. I understand that. But this is where I would want, you know, the.
But so's Kevin O'Connell, and he's 5-1. Right? I mean, look around. Other first-time coaches are doing well, which does not help Nathaniel Hackett in this argument at all.
No, it doesn't. And the biggest thing is just the week one decision that I think really piles onto this conversation altogether. You know, but yes, I understand that. But at the same time, I if I'm the Walton family, I'm going to go, wait, I'm going to trust the people that we have here football-wise that made this decision. It's still very early on in this process. And the biggest thing to me is right now, if I was going to sit down with the Walton family and we're going to watch some film, let's sit down, Walton family, and watch some film. They're going to see that the bigger issue is the quarterback right now. It's not the fact that people aren't open. And again, I haven't gone back to watch the film of last night or anything like that, so I can't speak to last night. But I've talked about this on my podcast. I've shown things on social and all of that to where it's not like the offense isn't delivering some places to throw the football. I come away every week writing a page of notes going, this is unbelievable. There's people open all over the field, and he just won't make it happen that way too. So that's where I guess I have a little bit of a side of me that wants to stick up for Nathaniel Hackett right now because of what you're talking about. I mean, maybe Seattle really did know that there was these issues, and it's all coming to us, you know, front and center right now because they can't play a style of football maybe just to support it, make the stats look good, and then he can have the ball at the end of the game to make magic happen, and I don't think he's capable of making magic, but I wouldn't go there yet, Mike, long story short.
By the way, that was Broncos limited partner Sir Lewis Hamilton, 7-time F1 world champion, sitting between Rob Walton and Greg Penner. And Sir Lewis Hamilton had to be thinking last night, given his sport, driving around in a race car, he had to be thinking, this shit is boring. Right? Look at him. He's like, when does the race start? Can we put some cars out on the field? Could that make it more exciting? He's got to be wondering what the hell he got himself into. The Waltons and the Penners have to be wondering what they got themselves into. And that's where I think some of the urgency may come from when they get to the bye week, because they had 11 days. They had the most time you can ever have between games without a bye week, from a Thursday to a Monday. And that was, we're going to go back to the lab and we're going to fix things. And at the end of the day, it looked fixed early.
Yeah.
And then it all fell apart again. Let's give the Chargers some praise, though, before. There's got to be some Chargers fans out there at 4:41 a.m. Pacific time waiting to get some praise for the team. They're 4-2, tied for first place in the division with the Kansas City Chiefs. Now the Chiefs have the tiebreaker, but the Chargers get a shot at them again. But, hey, glass half full, glass more than half full for the Chargers, who are somehow 4-2 despite all the injuries, despite all the, let's fourth down, let's go for it. 4th-and-42, let's go for it. I was surprised they didn't go for it on 4th-and-13 in their own territory in overtime last night. All that stuff, they've won more games than they've lost. So the Chargers have to be feeling pretty good. If they come out of 6 games that feel lackluster and uninspiring, having won 4 of them, they're in pretty good shape going into the final 11.
Yeah, they are in good shape, there's no doubt. But they're also in a shape of right now where you'd go, I don't really know how good they are. I don't sit there and go, oh, they're 4-2, and I really think they're a contender in the AFC. You know, but to your point, hey, it's good. It's money in the bank, and maybe they can like figure some things out here. But they've given me nothing. Like, their 4-2 compared to Kansas City's 4-2 is like, it's the absolute opposite ends of the spectrum who they're tied with in the AFC West right now. Kansas City's schedule has been, it's arguably the toughest schedule in football, and it continues and will continue. You know, they lost a heartbreaker to the Bills and absolutely dominated the Colts and lost that game because of a myriad of issues. This is a team that, you know, yeah, fought hard and lost to Kansas City, looked like crap and absolutely got crapped on and dominated by the Jacksonville Jaguars, right? Got too close for comfort with the Houston Texans. should have lost to the Cleveland Browns. Only the Cleveland Browns could do dumber things than the Chargers do at the end of the game. And then we had last night. So that's where it's like, yeah, they're 4-2. And early in the year, I was going, man, maybe they're a real Super Bowl contender this year. And they're one of those teams, I think, like your Minnesota Vikings. Yeah, it's 5-1, but I'm going to put something there because I don't really think it's as good as that record. At least that's the way I feel. I don't know about you, Mike.
No, it doesn't feel sustainable.
Right, right.
But I mean, that's the thing. We're going to have these teams that got off to a misleading start that are then just trying to dog paddle to the wall while the teams that got off to disappointing starts are going full speed to try to catch them. And some of them are going to hold on and get playoff spots, and some aren't. And frankly, we're going to be better off with those teams that find their kick in December and January, getting to the playoffs.
Right.
We're gonna have some teams get in that shouldn't be there because they will be falling apart when.
Yeah, we don't want the dog paddlers in there. You're right.
Yeah, and I think the Chargers and the Vikings are two examples of dog paddlers that could.
For the world's greatest athletes.
This is the showdown we've been waiting for.
There is nothing like competing on the world's biggest stage.
It's a world record again! Goal for the United States!
And when that stage is Paris, anything can happen.
I have never seen anything like this.
How about that?
An Olympics unlike any other.
What a performance!
The Paris Olympics, this summer on NBC and streaming on Peacock.
End up in the postseason. One thing before we take the break, and I saw that Courtney's crossed it out, but I do want to address this. I want to address the roughing the passer calls because Troy Vincent was on ESPN, the same network that televised last night's game on Sunday, and told us everything we need to know about what's going on with roughing the passer. So I would like to see some of that trickle into the broadcast. When there's a questionable call, and there were two of them last night, Morgan Fox hit Russell Wilson, and it was flagged. Bradley Chubb hit Justin Herbert.
When in doubt, flagged. Whip it out.
Well, and that's what I don't care if John Perry agrees with the call or not. That doesn't tell me what's going on. What's going on is the referees are told, when in doubt, whip it out. And I want to hear Troy Aikman say that. If he's going to say Seagar on the show, I want to hear him say, when in doubt, whip it out. Because that is what they want them to do. So it doesn't matter if our frame-by-frame review of the play tells us that there was or wasn't helmet-to-helmet contact, or there was or wasn't burping in the quarterback or full body weight. It doesn't matter whether we actually see it. What matters is they tell them, you've got the latitude to be wrong, we want you to be wrong, because we basically want a force field around these quarterbacks. We want the defensive players to think twice before they hit them, because we don't want them to get hit, we don't want them to get hurt. This is the polar opposite of Bounty Gate. We want to do everything we can to keep these guys healthy so more people will tune in to watch Justin Herbert versus Russell Wilson instead of Chase Daniel versus Brett Rippon. That's what it's all about. And Troy Vincent told us that on the same network the day before. So it doesn't matter whether you agree with it or disagree with it. What is happening here is they're told it's okay to be wrong. Go ahead and be wrong.
Yeah, I understand that. I get that. But it's wrong. And it's wrong about the sport, and it needs to be fixed, and it needs to be adjusted.
Oh, I know.
So,
But the fans who aren't watching the pregame shows, and we know the numbers tell us, especially the morning pregame shows, they're
right,
not watching.
Right.
It needs to be communicated to the fans during the games that this is what's happening so they understand it. So I mean, they still may be pissed off, but at least they understand what's going on. We need to tear down that wall and be transparent about it. And I'm calling on all networks to do it, including ours. You need to do it during the games so the fans understand what's happening. So it's not, are these referees blind? Are they inept? Are they corrupt? No, no, no. The league is telling them, don't be afraid to be wrong. That's why it's happening.
Yeah, I know. It's egregiously wrong. It's stupidly wrong. We're calling flags for kissing guys on the cheeks now. I mean, it's horrible. And it's messing with the natural bylaws of football. It's taking away intimidation. Let me make the quarterback feel uncomfortable. And the biggest thing is that it's taking away. And this play, again, this one's, I don't have a problem with this, even though he was pushed into that guy, which where you go, I don't know what you want him to do. You know, we didn't see the full.
When in doubt, it looks like it, so you throw it. And I'm at the point now where I'm bracing. Every time a quarterback gets hit, I'm bracing for the flag. Well, are we going to get it? It's like flipping a coin.
And that's wrong. That's a blatant ruining the sport moment, Mike. That's wrong. And it's wrong because this is too. I don't know. Right now, the 2002 Ravens could never win the Super Bowl. The 2015 Broncos could not win the Super Bowl. The 85 Bears could not win the Super Bowl. The 86 Giants couldn't win the Super Bowl. Probably two out of the three early Patriot dynasties could not win the Super Bowl because they'd be illegal hitting the quarterback too hard, too much. And they would be, we gotta give them first down. It's taken away a huge, like, if you don't have a superstar quarterback, then you're just not allowed to win anymore in football. That's basically what they're doing. And I hate it. And I'm going to continue to get on them about it. It has to be changed. Owners, meet up. Are they meeting today or next
Tuesday?
Today. That shit straight. Hurry up.
Six words, I think.
Get that shit straight?
No. here's the reality of the NFL. Defense wins championships. Offense makes money. And that's what it is. I said this last week. There should be a firewall between the integrity of the game and the NFL's business interests. And Troy Vincent's appearance on ESPN convinced me that they have torn the wall down. And they're admitting it. He started rattling off that 95 of the top 100 most viewed shows on TV last year were NFL games. We want that to continue. It's not about the integrity of each game. We're willing to screw a team. This is basically what they're saying. We're willing to screw a team with 15 yards of field position and an automatic first down that saves a drive and hurts the other team. We're willing to do that if it means sending the message there's a force field around these quarterbacks. We want them to be preserved. We want them to be healthy. We want them to be able to play.
Why has it gotten worse, though?
We want to make money.
Why has it gotten worse? Well, that's where nobody's gotten hurt in 10 years.
Nobody gets hurt. I know, but maybe they're trying to hold these old quarterbacks together as long.
Maybe
as
that
can.
Boring ass game last night would have been better if you could hit the freaking quarterback. Maybe that would have been better. And maybe that Colts shitty ass game on Thursday night against the Broncos would have been better if you could punish the quarterback and maybe would have some strip sack fumbles, turnovers, and some things to tune into. But instead, it's patty cake, Baker's man around the quarterback. It's wrong. And it's not affecting the sport that much. Peyton Manning retired. Tom Brady retired next year, and we'll all watch the Bucks play. We're not going to go, oh, no, Tommy's not – the quarterback's not there. We all watch. Doesn't really matter. It's not that important. They're ruining the sport. It's stupid. It's as you could tell, it really bothers me.
And as we go to break, let me just remind everybody that Chris is not a former defensive player who is salty about the inability of defensive players to hit quarterbacks. He's a guy who gave his spleen and nearly gave his life being relentlessly punished back in the day when – they didn't throw the flag over and over again. So if anybody has the authority to comment on the issue, I would say it's Christopher Davis.
Thank you, Mike.
Let's take a break. PFT Live, presented by Google Pixel. We'll take it right after this.
Really, it's an interesting question. When's the last